Today, I want to start into a series on what I've called preparing your kids for the real world. When I initially started putting this together, I was more thinking like later on in life, like preparing your kids as they get to be older teens. And then I just got to be thinking about the whole idea of parenthood and child training. And this morphed into a gargantuan study. I've got 37 pages of outline now. And just the table of contents is two full pages, so I got a lot to talk about over the next. Hopefully, I'll get it done in maybe the next two Sundays. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously not. It should be several Sundays, I would think. I sent this outline, as I'm going to be telling you a little later, but sent it to a friend of mine, and they said that the title of the series should be "How to Teach Your Children Everything." So I try to leave like no stone uncovered, and of course there's probably a million things that could be added in here that to teach your kids, obviously, because you have to pretty much teach them everything, right? That's your job, to teach your kids everything they need to know to be adults, right? So you parents, the ones of you who are parents, have a huge responsibility to train up your children in the way that they should go. And also those of us who want to be parents, like my wife and I, and the younger guys, kids, I'm sure eventually will get married and hopefully have kids. And so all these things should be good for them. And we got a brother down in Louisiana that wants to be married too and have kids, so this should be good for him. And there are also brethren down in Excelsior Springs that used to be members here that didn't have kids when I talked about child training here about 4 years ago. So it'll be a good, some of these things will be a good reminder, but obviously there's going to be much, much more I have to say than I did back then. I just want to go through the table of contents here and just give you an idea of what we're going to be covering over the next several weeks. We're going to talk about starting out, and the real focus of the study is the goal of raising children is to bring them to maturity. That's the whole purpose of it. But before you can really even start training kids, you need to make sure kids are disciplined. So I added the whole section in here on child discipline because this is core. If you don't have disciplined children, you're not going to be able to educate them, right? Education cannot take place in a madhouse, whether it's at home or in a classroom or whatever. You cannot educate a child in that type of environment. So we're going to talk about why children need to be disciplined. We're going to talk about the types of behavior that merit child discipline, and that's probably about all we'll get through today. Then we're going to talk about when children should be disciplined, as in what age should discipline begin, how children should be disciplined, where they should be disciplined. And then I want to get into the four areas of maturity, and that is physical, spiritual, intellectual, and social development. And I've broken it down into those four areas, and we're going to spend a lot of time on each one. And in physical development, like I said, I'm just going to try to cover everything that I could think of that I think is important about training children, and not just their education, but everything. So I'm going to talk about why it's important to make sure your children get adequate sleep. It's important to make sure they eat right, to be active, to teach them to work hard, to have good hygiene, to talk to them about puberty and sex whenever it's age appropriate. These are all things that parents need to be teaching their kids. Obviously, a lot of these things you're going to know already. I mean, you're not starving your kids to death, right? I mean, so I'm not telling you, like, I'm not trying to insult your intelligence, okay? And if you are a parent and you've been doing it for years and you know a lot of the things that I'm saying, don't feel like I'm insulting your intelligence and telling you, you know, what to do, that, you know, like you don't know anything, okay? But if you do happen to learn things from this, and granted, I don't have kids, and I'm going to get into that too, but I've had the pleasure to have been for the last, I don't know, 12 or so years, to have been around a lot of different Christian families, and I've learned a ton about child training. And that's not to certainly say that I am some expert or anything, and I don't have the personal experience, but I've learned a lot, and I want to share with you what I've learned from other people and from reading books and things like that. And if you learned something in here that you didn't know, then please just take it. It doesn't matter if it's coming from me and I don't have kids. Who cares? Just take it. If it's true, take it, right? And we're going to talk about spiritual development. And by the way, a lot of these things, these are going, some of you don't have kids. You don't want to have kids. Some of you already have kids that are grown or whatever. A lot of these things, they apply to all of us. If we apply these principles in our lives, the things that I'm telling you to teach your kids, and we should be doing them ourselves, we can apply a lot of these things to ourselves no matter how old we are. So spiritual development. I'm going to talk about what if your children are not elect? Because anybody ever think about that? Anybody with kids, you ever thought crossed your mind, like, what if my kids are not elect? What do I do? What if they don't? What if they are not God's children? What if they never do embrace the faith? What if they grow up and just outright rebel against it or whatever? What am I going to do in that situation? So I'm going to talk about that. And then I'm just going to talk about a whole bunch of just spiritual principles here that are important to impart unto your kids, like teaching them to believe in God, teaching them the scriptures, teaching them to obey God, to love and seek the truth, to pray, to repent and ask for forgiveness when they sin, to forgive others, what it means to actually be a Christian, teach your kids that, the importance of being in church and worshiping God, the importance of giving a portion of your income back to God, the importance of going to Bible study, the importance of singing hymns at home and in church, but at home. Teaching them to value family, teaching them to embrace God-ordained roles in families, teaching them to prefer the people of God, to hate evil and to be content. And I'm sure if you thought about it, you could probably think of at least 1,000 other things that are biblical principles to teach your kids. So as you find them, teach them. But I'm just kind of hitting some of the big ones here that I think are important. And I'm going to try, as I go through this, with each point to explain how teaching your children this will prepare them for the real world. Then we want to get into intellectual development. And I want to talk about how it's the parents' responsibility to train their to educate their children, not the government's responsibility. Now, as a parent, you can delegate that to somebody else, and if you choose to delegate that to the government, that's okay. But just remember, it's your responsibility. You bear the ultimate culpability for your child's education. We're going to talk about how education for children should start very early, how parents should take a direct part in their child's education, regardless if they're public schooled, homeschooled, private schooled, it doesn't matter. We're going to look at formal education. I'm going to talk quite a bit about homeschooling, and then I'm going to talk about government schooling, or public schooling as it's called, private schooling. And then I'm going to talk about one method of education and one particular teacher that you definitely want to stay away from. Do not educate your child with this device, and that is the television. We definitely don't want to go there. Not saying you can never watch TV, but for goodness sakes, don't use it as your teacher or as your babysitter or something like that. We'll talk about that. Talk about how we don't want to limit education to school time. Want to talk about the importance of establishing a daily routine for your children. This is very important, and I've seen examples of this, how this is crucial to child development. Want to talk about how it's important to teach them to read and to read to them. Teach them to value reading, learning, social interaction over antisocial behavior. And that is especially important in today's day and age. Like I said, all of us can learn some things here. There are people in this church, and you know who you are, that exhibit antisocial behavior. For instance, when we're all hanging out together and you're on your phone, you're paying attention to your phone instead of everybody else. So these are things that you need to teach your kids, because your kids are bombarded with these influences. And all they're going to see all day long, especially if they go to school, are a bunch of their brain-dead zombie friends that have their faces stuck in their phone for their whole lives. So we definitely need to come down on that one and do it by example, because your words don't mean much whenever you don't do it yourself. Another big one, you're going to be surprised at this one, teach your kids how to manage money. And we're going to talk about that, and I think that's extremely important. Then I'm going to talk about teaching your boys to think outside the box. Not so much the girls. The girls can just think in the box, because there's pretty much a box of what they should be doing. But as far as your career goes with your boys and your education for that, I'm going to talk about teaching them to think outside the box when it comes to post-high school education, because this is not 1992 anymore. So there are other options out there, and colleges for some, but it's not for all. And so I want to talk about that. And I've got some really interesting stuff, options, things that are out there that are alternatives and that are cheap, and that you can learn a ton of stuff on the internet, signing up for programs that don't cost very much, where you can pretty much learn any skill you could possibly imagine. So I'm going to talk about that. And I'm also going to talk a lot about teaching your kids how to be entrepreneurs and giving you ideas for that, teaching them how to be business-minded. And when I mean business-minded, I don't mean to teach them to be a CEO. I just mean to teach them to be able to provide a good or a service that is valuable to other people, that improves other people's lives, it in the process improves their lives by getting money for it, right? There's nothing wrong with making money, and you never want to shy away from teaching your kids how to make money. It's making money is fine. And when you do it honestly, you improve the lives of other people because you're giving them a good or a service that they value more than the money they give to you. So everybody wins, and you want to teach your kids how to do that. And then we're going to talk about the limits of education. And then lastly, I'm going to get into social development. And we're going to talk about teaching your kids how to talk and interact with adults and with other children. Because we live in the social media age, right? And people are more antisocial than ever. You ever talk to people? You ever talk to millennials, especially younger millennials? Do they know how to talk to? They don't know how to talk to people. They don't know how to hold a conversation. People have no social skills anymore. So you want to teach your kids those skills when they're young. Teach them to be respectful of authority, and not just parental authority, but authority of other adults as well. We're going to talk about that. Teaching them manners. That's another thing that's fallen by the wayside. I have a feeling that everything that I'm saying in this sermon, if this sermon was preached 100 years ago, I get nothing but amens. And actually, I probably wouldn't even get amens. I'd get boring, hello, this is what everybody does. This is what we've done for thousands of years. You're just preaching totally normal stuff to us. But if I preach today about some of these things, people are going to be like, whoa, you're taking it a step too far here, buddy. So anyway, we're going to talk about manners, talk about teaching kids to share and not be selfish, to clean up after themselves, and lastly, to volunteer. And anything else that I happen to think of between now and 10 weeks from now, whenever I'm done talking about all this stuff. So I may not even get through the introduction today. I don't know. It's taken a while. Okay, so like I said, I don't have kids, and I know that I don't have kids. And I'm kind of anticipating some objections, because the thing about you guys is you are human beings, right? And human beings are naturally going to think in certain ways. And when somebody that has not done something themselves is teaching you how to do it, your first thing that you might think is, who do you think you are teaching me something that you haven't done yourself, right? So I kind of anticipated those objections. Now, maybe none of you have those objections, and that's great. If you do, this is why I've done what I've done. So what I did is I put this whole outline together, and I finished the entire thing before I started, and then before I started preaching it, that is. And I sent this outline to two of my pastor friends who have already grown children. They've done an excellent job training up their kids. Their kids are all Christian church members. Some of their kids have kids of their own. And these men are good fathers. There's no doubt about it. By anybody's metric, these guys are good fathers. And then I also sent it to two Christian friends of mine and who I have learned a lot from over the years. And I just wanted to get pastor's perspective and then other people's perspective. And I sent them the outline. I said, just let me know, just read through this whole outline and see if there's anything here you object to. Do you think I'm wrong on anything? Especially the stuff that I don't have a verse for. Because if I got a verse for it, right, I don't care what anybody thinks about it. If I got a verse for it, it's true, right? But if I don't have a verse for it, if these are just observations and things, do you have any issues with it? Do you see anything you disagree with? And it came back and they didn't have any issues with it. And as a matter of fact, they gave me a lot of good stuff. So some of the stuff in this outline, quite a few points, are their words, pretty much verbatim, that I just put into this outline. Additional things that they brought up that I didn't think about. So I did this just so you know, when you hear this from me, you're not just hearing thoughts from a guy that doesn't have kids. You're at least hearing thoughts that people that do have kids, that either have them now or have already raised them and done a good job, and they say, this is good stuff. Okay, they put their stamp of approval on it. Not that I need that, and I rarely ever do that in a sermon, but in this particular thing, I thought it would be good since I don't have kids. I don't want you just dismissing everything I say to just, he doesn't know. Wait till he has kids. He'll find out, right? That's what I was anticipating. And furthermore, theory can be put into practice and should be put into practice. I have a friend, and I'll just name him because he did a good job. Eric Broyles in the Cincinnati church. Before he ever had kids, he preached a sermon called Fatherhood and Child Discipline. He had no children yet. And he talked about specifically the discipline act of parenting. And he did a fantastic job. It may still be on the Cincinnati church website. You could probably listen to it. And it was excellent. And another member of the Cincinnati church at that time, when he heard it, said, and this guy also had kids, he's not a member anymore, but he said, you know, when I heard Eric preach that sermon, I thought, this is crazy. You know, he doesn't even have kids yet, and you're talking about all this theoretical stuff, and boy, just wait till you have him, it's going to be totally different, and you're going to feel like whatever. And guess what? The guy that had the dumb objections didn't have control of his kids whatsoever, and the guy that preached a sermon that didn't even have kids put into practice every single thing down to the last jot and tittle what he said and did a really good job. So theory can be put into practice. And I know I'm going a long time without giving you a verse. We'll get to the verses. So then I've had this experience with family members, right? So I will offer my unsolicited advice to like people that are really close to me, like my brother. Generally, I don't offer unsolicited advice, but certain people, I go ahead and just overstep my boundaries and think, you know, I got to say something. And I talk to my brother about certain things. And of course, the objection comes back, you don't have kids, you just wait. You wait till you have kids and you'll see what it's really like. You'll see. And I'm thinking, okay, so you're telling me that as soon as you have kids, all the theory and especially all the biblical verses just all of a sudden reverse and none of them are true anymore and none of this stuff works, right? That's apparently what he's saying. So I thought, well, maybe he's right. So I called up Eric. And I said, Eric, do you remember when you preached that sermon on fatherhood and child discipline before you had kids? Yep. I said, did you find that after you had children, it was just like, whoa, I just had no idea what it was going to be like. All of this theory that I talked about, none of it, practically it doesn't work. You just can't do this kind of stuff. And I found out what it's really like to have kids. He said, no. I found out, he said he found out that it was harder, it was more difficult to do than he thought, but the principles that the scriptures lay down to train your children with, you, if you apply them, they work, and you can. It's just hard. It takes effort. But he said no. He did not find that anything that he taught in that sermon was just not true once you actually got into the real world. He didn't find that at all. So that gave me some comfort. I thought, okay, so I can read the scripture and know how the children ought to be trained without actually having them myself. Now, like I said, I totally understand it's difficult. I'm sure it'll be much harder than I think it will be. But I do think that all of these things that I'm telling you can be put into practice if there's a will to do it. Many of the points in this series are biblical, and therefore they're true. Right? So if I've got a verse after the point, it's biblical and it's true. And I don't really care what you think about that. There's some other points that will be different. But for instance, if you think that it's wrong to beat children with a rod, you're wrong, right? I don't care. When I get up here and say that children that disobey and are rebellious ought to be beaten with the rod, and you say, well, that ain't right, you're wrong. You know why? Because the Bible says, thou shalt beat him with the rod, right? The Bible says that. So I don't care what anybody says about that. So if I have a verse for something, then it does, I don't want to hear any objection at all, no matter what your objection is. It doesn't matter. If there's a verse for it, it's true. Now, some of the points here are my own views, and they're my own observations based on learning from other parents, and I've been around tons of them, including parents in this church. I've learned lots of stuff from you guys, too. So I've learned a whole lot of things from a whole lot of people, and these are my observations that I've learned, and from reading books. I've read numerous, I don't know how many books, but probably a half a dozen, what I consider to be pretty good books on child training and discipline and that kind of thing. So if you don't have to follow the things that I say that I don't have a verse for. So if I don't have a verse for it, you don't have to do it. I mean, it's up to you. I'm not going to tell you have to do that. But I would ask you to carefully consider what I say before you dismiss it, right? Carefully consider it, because I don't think I'm a stupid person. I think I've been around a lot of good parents in my life, and I've learned a lot of things, and I hope that I can share some of them with you, and maybe some of them you've just never even thought of, and maybe you'll hear something you'll think, wow, that would be a very effective method of doing thus and so that you had never thought about before. And some of the things in here I hadn't thought about because somebody else said, hey, here's another thing that I've really learned as a parent. I thought, oh, that's good, and I put that in there. Now, for those that have children, this study is especially important, obviously. For those who want to have children, this study is very important. But like I said, many of the things in this study, these are things that we all should be doing. In fact, all of these things we should be parents should be modeling for their children, and all Christians should be doing. So there should be something in here for everybody, hopefully. So now let's get to the study. I don't know how long that introduction took, but that was probably won't get as far into the outline as I wanted to today. The goal of raising your children, as I said, is to bring them to maturity. And Jesus Christ is the standard of maturity. So the goal of parenting should be to train up your children to make them act as much like Jesus Christ as they can. And that should be the goal of all of our lives. Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 13. I need to get a drink of water after that lengthy introduction. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 13. It says, this is speaking of why God gave pastors and teachers to the church. Verse 12, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So that's my job as a pastor. Now you talk about a weighty job description. If somebody gave you a job description and it said, here's just your one task, just this little thing, just bring all the people under your ministry unto the measure of the fullness of the stature of Jesus Christ. That's a pretty big job, right? Obviously. Well, guess what? As parents, you have a similar job to do with your children. Every father in this church and every father out there is basically a pastor of his own family, sort of. I'm not saying your family's a church exactly, but basically the father is the teacher. The father is the instructor. The father's the discipliner, right? So the father's the leader. So the father is like a pastor figure for his family. And every father has this responsibility to bring up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, to bring them to full maturity as best as he can, to make them as much like Jesus Christ as he can. Now, there are four areas of development in which your child needs to be proficient in order to be a godly, decent, productive Christian and member of society. And that is, he needs to be developed physically, spiritually, intellectually, and socially. And I didn't make these four things up because they just sounded good to me. I actually took them from a verse that I'm going to take you to here in just a second, and that is in Luke 2 and verse 52. Remember, we are to be brought to the fullness of the stature, the measure of Christ, right? Well, let me show you how Christ was brought up as a child, how he developed as a child. He developed in four areas. And I just noticed this when we read this verse this morning for the morning scripture reading. I noticed the verse before the verse that I'm going to read you. So I'm going to start with verse 51, pardon me. Because remember I said that I added in the section about child discipline because it's necessary to have disciplined children before you can educate them, right? Look at what verse 51 says. This is speaking of Jesus Christ, and he went down with them, that is with his parents, and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. And his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. Notice it doesn't say that Mary and Joseph were subject unto Jesus, like a lot of parents are subject to their kids these days. Has anybody ever seen any parents that are subject to their kids? That their kids run the show? Anybody ever seen that? I'm sure you have. I'm sure you got friends. I'm sure you've been to the grocery store a few times, right? And you see children, it's like their parents are some stupid cow with a big ring in their nose, and the kids got a hold of the ring and just leading those parents wherever they want. Buy this for me, buy that for me, throw a fit, I'll do whatever you say just to make the peace, right? Most parents are subject to their children. That should not be the case. You should be manipulating your children. Your children should not be manipulating you. And I don't know why it is that little wee kids that couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag can somehow just walk all over their full-size grown-up parents. I just don't get that. I don't get that at all. That's crazy to me. So let's read verse 52 now. Here are the four areas that Jesus grew in because he was subject unto his parents. And Jesus increased in wisdom, that's intellectually, in stature, that's physically, in favor with God, that's spiritually, and in favor with man, that's socially. You see, Jesus grew in all four areas. He didn't just increase in spiritual capacity. He did have an excellent understanding at that age, but he increased in all four of those areas. He could go into that temple, and not only did he have a superior knowledge of the scriptures, which was excellent, but he also could converse as a 12-year-old boy. He could converse with the doctors of the law. He knew how to talk to adults, right? He wasn't stuck all day long with other 12-year-olds retarding his growth, right? He was around adults, obviously, and he could talk with adults. That's an important thing to teach your children. But we'll get into all that stuff later. So parents must guide and teach their children to grow in these four areas. Now, maybe I think a lot more of my study than you do, and maybe you will never look at the thing again once I'm done with it, and that's possible, and I get it. Everybody's got busy lives. But I would encourage you to take this outline from time to time and go back through it and review these things. You don't have to listen to whole sermons if you don't want to, although you'll get a lot more out of them than you would the outline, but go at least back through the outline. And as you spend your time teaching your children the scriptures every day, which I hope you do, which you should, I got a whole section there on spiritual things, so just go down through those things and just follow the outline. I mean, there, make sure you're hitting all the high points. Go through, maybe make it a point. And I know I'm dreaming here, right? This is probably not going to happen. And I should do it myself, and I intend to do it myself. Take this outline out once a year and review these things and say, have I done these things? Maybe at the end of the year, maybe the end of next year. Review this outline and say, how am I doing on these things? And I've got things in here basically from when your children are wee little babies until the whole time when they're out of the house. I mean, I've got all kinds of stuff in here. Now, maybe it's a pipe dream. I don't know. But I would encourage you to do that anyway. The best way to learn something is repetition. So you learn it and then you review it, and that's how you really can get it in your head. The most effective way of teaching your children is by showing them by your example. That's the best way to teach. You should instruct as well, but show them. If you want to teach your child what to look for in a good man when she grows up, or if you want to teach your child what to look for in a good woman when they grow, when he grows up, and wants to find a good wife or a good husband, you know how you do that? It's not by giving them books on marriage. It's not by, I mean, even reading the Bible, that's good, and you should do that. But you know the best way probably to do that is to take what's in the Bible and live it. Do it in front of them. Let them see that. And that will be a far better teacher than anything else. I read a statistic the other day, and I forget where it was from, and they asked kids if they would be happier if their parents loved them or if their parents loved each other. I was shocked. You know what they said? They'd be happier when their parents loved each other than when their parents loved them. You think about that. It means a lot to kids when they can see that their parents love each other. That really makes a big difference for kids. So I want to consider each of these areas in detail, but before we do, we got to get into the child discipline area. Because if your child's not properly disciplined, then teaching and instruction will become difficult, and his physical, spiritual, intellectual, and social development will be hindered. You're not going to be able to teach your kid, you're not going to be able to teach him anything. You're not going to be able to teach him to eat right if you don't even have dinner time as a family at home and you just let them pop whatever they want in the microwave or something like that and just eat whatever they feel like, right? If you have an undisciplined home, you're not even going to be able to teach your kids basic things like how to eat, right? Let alone spiritual things. So it's important to have the discipline down first. Like I said earlier, you cannot properly educate children in a madhouse, whether that madhouse is your own house or whether it's the classroom at school. Whatever it is, it must be ordered. And if it's not ordered, you're not going to be able to educate like you should anyway. So before the child is trained, he must have his behavior controlled. Now, as I said, a lot of this I covered 4 years ago. But like I said, since then we've had new members come in that weren't here then. We've had members that had, or at least in the other church, that have kids that didn't have them then. We got, I'm married now, and I want to have kids. So this stuff, when I'm teaching you, I'm teaching me. I'm teaching me everything I'm teaching you. I've already taught it to myself once because I made the outline. I'm going to teach it to myself again, and then I intend to review it and teach it to myself multiple times. So that's why I'm going through this section here. I basically took the old section from the study that I did on, I think it was called Child Discipline Training and Education. I think that's what the series was called. And the first half of that was on child discipline. So no need to reinvent the wheel. I took that, but then I added a bunch of stuff to it because, you know, I've grown in the last 4 years and I thought about other stuff. So some of that information I'm going to recover that I covered before. Let me see a show of hands. How many people here remember every single thing that I taught in that sermon on child discipline 4 years ago? Okay, nobody. How many people remember anything I taught in that sermon on child discipline 4 years ago? Okay, we got one person. Okay, so that means the rest of you remember nothing that I taught in the sermon on child discipline, so it's probably good that I review it all. I'm sure maybe you guys are shy. I'm sure somebody remembered something that I taught in that sermon. But anyway, so it's probably good that we review it. And I have a feeling when we start reviewing, maybe it'll bring things to your mind. Oh, yeah, I remember when he said that before. So that was kind of meant as a joke, by the way. Didn't get any laughs, but it was kind of meant as a joke anyway. Okay, so let's first of all look at why children must be disciplined. So I'm going to kind of look at it with all the W's, the who, what, why, when, where, how, and so on. So why must children be disciplined? Because some people out there don't think that they need to be disciplined. I mean, there's a big movement out there in this modern parenting movement that you just let your child's natural character develop as it will, and he will turn into this wonderful little autonomous human being. He'll just be just a wonderful person, and whatever his natural inclinations are will just come out and flourish, and he'll just be such a wonderful little guy and grow up into a wonderful person. Yeah, good luck. You know what would happen to a child like that? I'll tell you. The Bible will tell you what will happen to him. He's going to turn into a miserable little wretch is what's going to happen to him. And he's going to ruin your life and pretty much everybody's life that he comes into contact with. The reason why children have to be disciplined is because foolishness is bound in their hearts. It's not found there. It's bound there. Turn with me to Proverbs 22 and verse 15. Or I should say it's not only found there, it is bound there. Proverbs 22 and verse 15. It says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. That foolishness is bound in there. And you know what bound means? It means made fast by a tie, confined, fastened down, bandaged. It's like Adam took foolishness and put it in a child's heart and then tied it and like wrapped that foolishness in him so tightly that it cannot be brought out. Or that I shouldn't say it can't be brought out, but that it won't just naturally fall out and seep out. Okay, it's not going to come out on its own, let me put it that way. It is bound, tied, confined in there. Foolishness is the quality or condition of being foolish. And foolish is fool-like, wanting in sense or judgment. Now let me define what a fool is. Since foolishness is foolish and foolish is fool-like, let's define what a fool is. A fool is one deficient in judgment or sense, one who acts or behaves stupidly, a simple person, or a silly person, a simpleton. See, back in even in these definitions, when these definitions were in vogue a long time ago, silly didn't mean what we think of silly today, right? A silly person was not just somebody who's just kind of funny and, you know, goofy. And no, that's not what silly meant. You remember the Bible talks about silly women laden with sins that can be drawn away of their own lust? This is speaking of a foolish, stupid person. Silly person, a simpleton. In biblical use applied to vicious and impious persons, the word has in modern English a much stronger sense than it had at an earlier period. It is now an implication of insulting contempt, which does not in the same degree belong to any of its synonyms or of the derivative foolish. So a fool in the Bible is probably one of the harshest condemnations of a person that you'll find. Once again, when we call somebody a fool today, we just mean he's the class clown, right? Or he's just the goofy guy or whatever. But in the Bible, when somebody was a fool, they were a vicious and impious person. They were a simpleton, somebody who believes stupidly, somebody has no judgment, they have no sense. They're an idiot. And they're people that other people would despise and be fed up with. That's what a fool is. So when you read through the book of Proverbs, just keep that in mind, that this is a high term of derision when you call somebody a fool. Well, guess what? That is what is in every child. It's in what's in every one of us by nature. Every child is born with that kind of stupidity and lack of judgment in them, right? It's there. And it's got to be driven out. It will not leave naturally. To drive means to force men or animals to move on before one or flee away from by blows or intimidation, to urge on or impel with violence. That's what it means to drive. Remember when it said Jesus drove them out of the temple when he made the scourge of small cords? That's the same thing that must be done to children. Basically a scourge, maybe not a scourge of small cords, but a rod anyway, to drive the foolishness out of them. That is what the Bible teaches must be done. It is to force that foolishness out of them, to force it to move on and flee away from the child. That is parents' responsibility. Now, a child, the scripture says, that is left to himself, you know what he'll do? He will bring his mother to shame. Proverbs 29 and verse 15. If you decide that, and I know you won't, I know you guys, all you parents here have enough sense, you got good sense, you've been under biblical teaching for a long time, and you understand these things. I know that you wouldn't do these things, but there are plenty of parents out there. You ought to see J.P. Sears, one of his latest videos on modern parenting. It's funny but sad at the same time. I mean, it's making a mockery of the modern parent, and it's funny, but at the same time, the reason why it's funny is because these things actually happen. These are what parents are actually like today, a lot of them, and it's utterly absurd. But if you want to leave your child to himself and just assume that he's going to develop into a good and productive and virtuous adult, it ain't going to happen. He is going to bring you to shame. Proverbs 29 and verse 15. It says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." How many of you have seen it? You ever been to the grocery store? You ever see, I love the grocery store example, it's probably the most obvious one. You ever see the mother with the kids, especially the little kids, and they're just running everywhere, they're screaming, they're making noise, they're grabbing stuff off the shelves, they're touching things, and the mother's just exasperated, and she's looking around, and she is embarrassed and ashamed. You know why? Because she's left her children to themselves. She has not driven the foolishness out of them. And you know what? She didn't do it at home. If you do it at home, your children are not going to act like heathens in the grocery store. Or maybe they'll try it once in the grocery store, and then when they get a good beating, when they get back to the car, or maybe in the store if nobody's looking, then that's going to end, right? No more bad behavior in the grocery store. But the problem is inconsistency. The problem is when kids don't always get the spanking whenever they deserve one, then they'll just try it. They'll push you as far as they can go. We're going to talk about inconsistency later on. Now, the goal is to train them up in the way that they should go with the hopes that when you do and when they are old, they will not depart from it. Look at Proverbs 22 and verse 6. There's a promise here, but there is an axiom here from God, from Solomon, from things that he recognized to be universally true, generally true among all men. That's what a proverb is. It is an observation that generally holds true. And Solomon saw this in his years, the wisest man that ever lived, save the Lord Jesus Christ. He saw that when parents train up their children in the way that they should go, their kids may go a little wild for a while, but they will come back to it. That's what Solomon noticed. And it's true. It is true. It says in Proverbs 22:6, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Don't train them up in the way that they want to go, because remember, foolishness is bound in their hearts. They're fools. They're simpletons. They don't have judgment and good sense, right? And I'm not insulting your kids. We were all like that. That's what kids are like. They are simpletons. They're beautiful and they're fun and they're wonderful, but they are simpletons, right? And you have to drive that out of them, and then you have to educate them and teach them the right way. But it says there, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The promise is when he's old. So there might be a period of time there where he'll do the prodigal son thing. Hopefully not, but that could happen. But when he is old, he will come back to it. Page 4 of 37, we're moving right along. It's a general rule that parents who train their children in the way that they should go will see them grow up to be good, wise, and well-behaved adults. It's a general rule. If you do it the way that you should, and the way that you should is the way that this Bible tells you to, and if you do it that way, it's a general rule that your kids are going to turn out well. Good, wise, well-behaved adults. Now, there will be occasionally good parents who did a good job training up their children who will see them grow up to be fools, right? That does happen. God's own children, you know, the children of Israel were God's own children, right? Some of them turned out to be fools. So it does happen. Sometimes you just have foolish children and you've done everything you can do. I mean, the people back, remember the Israelites back in Deuteronomy, and they had a son that was a drunkard and a glutton, and they brought him to the elders of the city, and the instruction was that they've trained him upright. They've disciplined him. They've chastised him. They had done what they should, and he was still a fool. And then they took him outside the gates and stoned him. That's what happened in the Old Testament. So in the Old Testament, if they were keeping the Old Testament, you didn't really have to worry about misbehaved kids. Because when you've done what you should and they still want to be stubborn fools, drunkards and whatnot, they die. That takes care of disobedient children, I guess. Now, in the Old Testament, can you imagine the weight that is on your shoulder as a parent that you better train those kids up the way that they should go? Because if you don't, they're going to be killed. He that does not obey his father and mother, it says in Proverbs, the ravens of the valley shall pick out his eyes, or something like that. There in Proverbs chapter 30. You know what that's saying? People, especially in the Old Testament, I totally kind of botched that verse, but it's in Proverbs 30 and verse 17. It says, the eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagle shall eat it. The ravens of the valley are going to be eating this kid's eyes. Why do ravens eat people's eyes? Because they're dead, right? That's what ravens do, like vultures. In the Old Testament, if you mocked your father and your mother, you died. So in the Old Testament, it was really important that you train up your children in the way that they should go. Well, guess what? It's no less important now. Maybe we don't have laws that put kids to death that are rebellious and disobedient, but it is no less important now. It is no less serious now to train up our children in the way that they should go. God takes this matter very seriously, and so should we. Now, there will also occasionally be bad parents who do a terrible job training their children, who will see them grow up to be good people in spite of their poor upbringing. Right? I'm sure we've all seen that before. And history is replete with that. People that grew up in horrible home situations were abused, were totally neglected, were just told how stupid they were their whole lives, or were just let just have free reign, never had any oversight whatsoever, and they turned out well. But that is the exception to the rule, isn't it? That's not the norm. That's not what normally happens. It does happen by the grace of God. Who knows? Maybe it happened to some of us, some of you. Maybe that's your story, right? Not a good upbringing and turned out well, but remember, by the grace of God. You can't take credit for it. By the grace of God. Therefore, parents with either good or bad kids should not automatically take the credit or the blame for it until they've carefully considered whether or not they trained and disciplined their children according to the Scriptures. So if your kids turn out well, don't necessarily just pat yourself on the back and say, I am a great parent. Examine the Scriptures, examine the history with your kids and say, did I do what I should have done? And if you did, then yes. Good parent, good job, good result. Solomon's proverb held true. if your kids turn out lousy, don't just necessarily automatically assume that I did a terrible job as a parent. Look, same thing. Look back through. Did I train them up in the way that I should go? And be honest with yourself. Everybody loves to self-deceive themselves and look back and say, what a wonderful job I did. Be honest with yourself. God forbid if your kids go A-wire and if they go off and turn into the prodigal son and never come back, give yourself an honest assessment. If you train them up in the way that they should go, you got nothing to worry about. You can at least lay your head down at night and you can realize that I did what I should have done, and you know what? I leave them in God's hands. But for goodness sakes, you don't ever want to have your kids turn out terrible and then look back afterwards and say, man, I didn't do hardly any of this stuff that the Bible tells me I'm supposed to do. I totally blew it. And now you got to watch your kid be a fool for the rest of your life when you didn't do what you should have done. So that's why I'm doing this sermon now, because, you know, even you guys, I mean, your kids, your older ones are turning out great, and you got lots of times with the younger ones, and I just don't want to see anything bad happen to anybody. So I want to give you the best teaching that I can, and of course, I want to, hopefully, Lord willing, apply it in my own life as well. Let me just see what the time is here. I don't know how long I've been up here yapping. Okay, I got a little more time. Only been 46 minutes. Let's do another section. So, getting back to this thing, why is foolishness in their heart then? So why are children, I mean, they're so beautiful. You see a little newborn baby. Well, the newborns aren't quite so beautiful, but once they come home from the hospital and get cleaned up a little bit, and they're a few days old, they're really cute, right? I've never seen one coming right out of the womb, but I've been told they're pretty gnarly looking. So, but anyway, once they come home, when they're a week old, they're really cute, right? They're really sweet. But in that little ball of sweetness, there is foolishness bound in that little heart. And if you don't believe me, just ask Andrea. She's got a little baby in her womb right now, and the thing is already kicking her. You know, I mean, they can't even get out of the womb yet before they're causing their parents trouble. So anyway, it's the problem is that the foolishness is bound in their hearts from their sinful nature that they inherit from Adam. Look at Ephesians 2 and verse 3. We've been over all this information lots of times before, so I'm not going to dwell on it, but I am just going to give you the facts of why this foolishness is bound in their hearts. Ephesians 2 and verse 3. Among whom also we all had our conversation in times past, in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. Just like dogs are born and they start walking around and barking, right? Children are born with foolishness in their heart and they start walking around acting stupidly, right? That's just what is inborn, innate in their nature of children. And that's just how it is. The reason is that they inherited Adam's sinful nature. Romans 5 and verse 12. Now, this is nothing new to you people, but I'm sure that there are lots of people out there that would hear something like this, and they've just been filled with modern psychobabble their whole lives, and this would be highly offensive to them and just unbelievable. Well, I just say, just open your eyes and just pay attention a little bit and just watch what kids do. If you don't restrain them, they're going to turn into little thieves and rebels and liars, and they're going to turn into terrible people because that's what they are by nature. That's what we all are by nature. Romans 5 and verse 12. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. And this sinful nature doesn't come about at some age of accountability, at 12 years old or some nonsense. This is present the whole way at youth. Let's look at Genesis 8 and verse 21. Genesis 8 and verse 21. This comes about very early. Genesis 8:21 says, "And the Lord smelled a sweet savor." This is after the flood. "And the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more every living thing as I have done." You see what God says? This is what God says. This is not what I say, what anybody else says? God says, he said this to himself, that the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. That means that kids, from their youth, little kids have evil imaginations. They have evil within them. And that evil needs driven out with the rod. But it's not even from you. It's from birth. Look at Psalm 58 and verse 3. Psalm 58 and verse 3. Psalm 58 and verse 3. It says, the wicked are estranged from the womb as soon as they they go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Now, you can choose to not believe this, but you know what? What does the verse say? It says the wicked go about speaking lies as soon as they're born. That's what it says. Now, you say, well, how can a baby speak lies? He can't even speak. Well, I have been told that babies have a certain cry that they will cry whenever they are truly in distress, you know, when something's really wrong. And then they have a cry that they can whimper about when they're just being brats or whatever, just want your attention or something like that. And I have been told that if they don't get the attention that they want, they'll use the cry like they're dying just to get your attention. So they've deceived you, right? They've lied in a sense. And Andrea's nodding her head there. Apparently this is true. So I've never seen this myself, but like I said, other people have told me this. Actually, I heard Pastor Mott say this. So if it's not true, then you can go charge him with false doctrine or something. But anyway, so there's an example of how the wicked could go astray from the womb speaking lies. But I have a feeling what the psalmist is saying here is man is born dead in sin and he's a liar from the very beginning. Even before he can speak the lies, he's a liar. That's what's going on here. But it doesn't even start at birth. This sinful nature that we have begins at conception. Look at Psalm 51 and verse 5. Psalm 51:5, David says, behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. Shapen in iniquity. And no, this is not David's mother's sins or anything, any nonsense like that. David is saying that I was a sinner from the time I was conceived. Because it makes sense. If death passed upon Adam, if death passed from Adam upon all men, when did all men inherit it? At some age, they weren't pure for some period of time, and then they inherit it, right? They inherited it as soon as they are created, right? So man is a sinner from birth. Children have this foolishness inborn into them. Now, not only is disciplining children good for the children, it's good for the parents, and it's good for others. For goodness sakes, have mercy on your fellow man and discipline your children, and don't make them suffer with your foolishness, right? But it's good for you. If nothing else, just be selfish, right? Be selfish, make a good life for yourself, and discipline your kids because it's good for you. It makes your life peaceful. You see, children should not be your oppressors. Look at Isaiah 3 and verse 12. Isaiah 3 and verse 12. There's a lot of people these days out there in the world that need to hear this stuff, because a lot of people vex me every day when I go out and I see unruly children. They're vexing my soul. They need to chasten their children so they give them rest and give me rest. I was so close a while back. I was in Panera. This is quite a while back, but there was a woman there and she had a little toddler and he was just giving her fits and just giving her all kinds of trouble. And she clearly, I just don't think she probably even knew what to do. She was just clueless. And, you know, I feel bad for her because she probably didn't have anybody to example to see or nobody to tell her how to do it. Or maybe her parents didn't know or didn't care. I don't know what. But anyway, she was just having the worst time with this kid and he was just screaming and throwing fits. And I can't imagine that the whole restaurant wasn't as irritated as I was, or maybe not quite, but I have a feeling that everybody was distracted and irritated. And I was this close, and I was going to be nice, to just walking up and just calmly sitting next to her and just saying, I can share with you a way that you can make your child behave, and you and him will have a nice, peaceful time at this restaurant, if you want to know. And he, right about the time that I just couldn't handle it anymore, he started being quiet. I don't know if she probably gave him a cookie or something or what. Anyway, and I didn't do it. But I was so close tonight, and I was going to be nice. I wasn't going to be mean about it. I was going to be nice and just ask her, do you want to know how you can fix this problem? She probably wouldn't have, but that's all right. At least I would have tried. Okay, so children, back to Isaiah. Isaiah 3 and verse 12. Children should not be your oppressors. Isaiah 3:12. The Lord says, as for my people, Children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. God says they that are leading you, they were letting women lead them. That shouldn't be. Women should not be leading men. Right? Women should not be in leadership positions in government and things like that, in the house. That should not be happening. So when women are leading men, they are causing them to err, God says. So this verse takes care of the feminist agenda, but then look what it says. As for my people, children are their oppressors. What's happened in our country? Women have been made to rule over men, right? We've had the women's movement, all the suffrage acts and all that stuff going back to the early 1900s, and all of a sudden women have all these equal rights, so-called, and they're in leadership positions all over the place in this country, and guess what? They've caused us to err, and it's the men's fault because the men let it happen. They've caused us to err, and guess what? What else has happened? Children are our oppressors. This should not be. We are big people. Look, there is no little two-year-old kid that is going to tell me what to do. There is no two-year-old kid that's going to force me to do anything except for feed him and give him clothing and so on, just because and he's not forcing me to. God is forcing me to because that's my duty to him. But no two-year-old kid is going to force me to do anything. I'm an adult. Children should not oppress us. That's crazy. If you cannot control your children when they're little, that's crazy. You are big. They are little. That should not happen. Now, when children are our oppressors, if they are, it harms both them and you. It's not good for them because they're going to turn out rotten. And it's certainly not good for you for many reasons. The least of which is you don't have any peace in your life anymore. And you probably feel like a defeated person whenever a little two-year-old kid has his way with you. I'd have pretty darn low self-esteem if a two-year-old kid's having his way with me. He's two! I mean, for goodness sakes. Now, if you correct your children, they'll give you rest. Proverbs 29 and verse 17. You say, oh, you wait, it's harder than you think. I'm sure it is harder than I think. But, I mean, is it not a fact that a grown man should be able to have his way with a two-year-old child? Is that not a fact? How hard it is, I don't care. Is that not a fact that a grown man should be able to be in control of a two-year-old child? I would think so. Proverbs 29 and verse 17. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. You see, to have a peaceful, happy family, happy existence, happy life, correct your children, and you'll have rest. If you don't correct your children, you're going to have chaos. You're not going to have peace. You're going to be tired all the time. You're going to be frustrated. You're going to be embarrassed to go out in public because every time you do, your kids embarrass the heck out of you. You don't want that, right? I certainly don't want that whenever I have kids. If you correct your children, they'll bring you much happiness. It says in Proverbs 10 and verse 1 and in Proverbs 15:20, go ahead and turn to Proverbs 10:1, that a wise son maketh a glad father. Proverbs 10 and verse 1. Proverbs 10 and verse 1. It says, the Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. I want you to notice something. Did you know that the Proverbs actually start, the Proverbs per se start in chapter 10? When you look back through the first nine chapters, they're not really Proverbs per se, because there's really, most of it is a connected stream of thought from one thing to the next, and it's more instruction and teaching. They're not Proverbs per se. Proverbs are these little pithy sayings, like little one-word sayings, usually with a comparison or a contrast or something. If you want to know what Proverbs are, just read chapter 10, through the end of Proverbs, or through probably 29 anyway. That's really Proverbs per se. Prior to that, there's a lot of instruction about wisdom, about knowledge, and so on. But then the Proverbs come in verse 10. What is the very first thing out of Solomon's mouth? It's interesting. I just noticed this. The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son maketh a glad father. There's his first proverb. But a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. If you want to be a glad father, then you need to have a wise son. Now, you're not going to have a wise son just by letting him grow up how he's going to grow up. Why? Because foolishness is bound in his heart, and foolishness and wisdom are the opposites, right? So if you want to have a wise son, you got to drive the foolishness out, and then you have to impart the wisdom to him, right? You got to teach him the scriptures, right? So you got to drive out the foolishness with the rod, and then teach him the scriptures. Then you have a wise son. Then you are a glad father. But, look at the contrast, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. On the other hand, you are going to be heavy, sad, depressed, if you don't drive out the foolishness and you don't impart the wisdom to the kids. Proverbs 15 and verse 20. This was so important, Solomon repeated it twice. Proverbs 15:20. It says, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish man despiseth his mother. Why is his mother having trouble there in verse 10? When it says a foolish son's the heaviness of his mother, why is she having trouble? Because her son despises her. Why does her son despise her? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because he doesn't respect her. Why doesn't he respect her? Because she didn't discipline him. She let him be in control. And because of that, he doesn't respect her and he despises her. Think back to the teachers that you had in high school. Did you have any teachers in high school that didn't have control of the class? You ever have a new teacher, like the first year? You ever have a first year teacher, a student teacher or something? And it's just, maybe some older people, it was probably better back then, but even when I was in school 20 years ago or whatever, you had a new teacher. It's like the kids, if they didn't come in and know how to establish themselves, the kids would just walk all over them. Sometimes they wouldn't even last a year. The kids would just ruin them. Why? Because they didn't have respect for them. Those teachers did not come in and lay down the law. They had no respect for them. They despised them. And it was the heaviness of those teachers. Same thing will happen with your kids. They will not respect you if you let them run the show. Turn to Proverbs 23 and verse 15. Proverbs 23 and verse 15. It says, my son, if thine heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. I've imagined someday when I have kids, especially when they get to be older, in opening up these verses and telling them these things, reading them, my son, be wise. Please be wise. If you're wise, you're going to make my heart glad. Listen to the things that I've taught you. Listen to the scriptures. Obey the scriptures. A wise son maketh a glad father. If the son is wise, the father's heart will rejoice. But on the other hand, if you don't correct your children, they will bring you much pain, sorrow, and embarrassment. Remember Proverbs 10:1, a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Proverbs 15:20, a foolish man despiseth his mother. It's so funny. People have it so wrong. Nowadays, parents think, oh, if I spank my kid, they're going to hate me. They're not going to love me anymore. No. Have I got a witness? When you spank your kids, do they love you or hate you? At the time, they probably don't like you very well, right? It hurts, right? But after they've gotten the spanking, right? And after the punishment's been dealt out, and then after reconciliation's made, do they love you or hate you? Say it. They love you, don't they? They do. People, it seems a little counterintuitive. If you beat your child with the rod, and I'm talking biblically, I'm not talking about child abuse here, your children will love you. They will appreciate the fact that you love them enough to discipline them and to not let them act out their foolishness and destroy themselves. Let's look at Proverbs 17 and verse 25. Proverbs 17 and verse 25. A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bare him. And there are a lot of parents out there that have foolish children that have grown up and that are fools. And probably most of them blew it. And there is the occasional one that probably did a good job. And it's just whatever. They just were unfortunate and they have a foolish son. And just talk to them. Ask them how it affects their lives every single day. I know of a parent, a friend of my mom's. I think I told you about her son died of a heroin overdose here a few months ago. And I don't know what they did, right or wrong, who knows. But they are really, really hurting now. And of course, you can imagine, that would be an absolutely horrible thing to experience. I don't know whether, who knows what kind of a job they did, but I do know this. If you don't train up your children the way they should go, that could happen to your kids. It happens to a lot of them. And you don't want that to happen. That's why I'm preaching this sermon. I know I'm telling you, probably you probably know all this stuff, right? Maybe I've told you nothing new today, I don't know. But it's good to have it reinforced. It's good to have it continually reminded and brought to the forefront of your memory. Proverbs 17 and verse 25. It says, oh, I already read that. Let's go on to the next one. Proverbs 19 and verse 13. Proverbs 19, 13. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. There's two things that are going to cause a man's life to be unhappy, right? Foolish, unruly children, and an unruly wife, for that matter. A contentious woman that's constantly nagging him and giving him a hard time all the time. That is not going to make a man very happy. Notice the word there. A foolish son is the calamity of his father. I mean, when I think of calamity, I think of tornadoes, hurricanes, you know, forest fires, nuclear bombs going off and totally destroying your life, right? That's a calamity, right? Well, guess what? The Bible says, and I'll bet you, you parents could probably, you could figure this out. You could just put, you kind of know, and you could just think, what would happen if my kid turned out to be a total fool? I'll bet you could imagine, and you could say, you know what? A tornado ripping my house to shreds would be nothing if one of my kids went out and became an utter fool. You agree with that? I would agree with that. Of course I would. I just said it. I mean, why? Of course I would agree with it. Look at Proverbs 19 and verse 26. Proverbs 19 and verse 26. Especially if you could have prevented it. You know, if you couldn't have, if you did your job and it happened anyway, then you can rest at night. But if you could have prevented it, I'd rather have the tornado. Proverbs 19 and verse 26. He that wasteth his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causeth shame and bringeth reproach. To waste means to lay waste, devastate, ravage, or ruin. Why do you suppose he did that? Well, my guess is he was not ever restrained. His passions were never put in check. He was allowed to do whatever he wanted all the time, and he was just probably full of anger and rage and anxiety. That's what happens to kids when you don't discipline them. And then he just goes nuts, and he wastes his father, just destroys his father's life. We don't want to go there. I got one more for you. Proverbs 28 and verse 7 on this point. Proverbs 28 and verse 7. I actually had the verses printed out, these particular verses printed out, and I was just going to rifle through them, but there's too much good stuff in here just to read them and keep moving. Proverbs 28 and verse 7. It says, "Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father." This is one of the things, one of the reasons why you want to discipline your children. I don't think I'm even going to get to that point. I was going to get to it where things that merit discipline, corporal discipline, one of them is hanging out with friends that are fools. And this is the verse. This may be the verse that I used, or it may not be. I don't remember. But it says there that he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father. You don't want to let your kids hang out with fools. You know, I just learned something the other day, and I don't know, I'd have to get the book and read it before I could recommend it. I was listening to a podcast, and the guy that wrote this book was, and I don't remember the title of it, he was saying that the whole idea of adolescence is manufactured. That this idea of this period between puberty and 18 or 20 years old when you become an adult is just a manufactured thing, that he would maintain that they're adults when they go through puberty. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that entirely. I mean, there is big changes that happen between puberty and 18 or 20 years old. So I would not say that every child is an adult or something like that. But I do agree with his premise that we ought to treat kids as much like adults as we can once they go through puberty. And as much as they're ready for, give them the responsibility that you can give them. Don't, if they're not mature enough, then don't give them responsibility, of course. But give them as much as you can. Don't try to hold them back. And he made a point that I hadn't thought about. He says that in times past, kids, they might have gone to school till what, the eighth grade? My grandparents went to school till the eighth grade, basically around puberty. And back then, they weren't, people have puberty way earlier nowadays than they did back then. But basically up until about that time, and they learned all the stuff that they really needed to be an educated person, reading, writing, arithmetic, those kind of things. And then they went out into the fields with their dad farming, or they went out with their dad who was an artisan, or they were an apprentice to probably their father or somebody else, and they learned a trade, and they were around adults, and they were working. When they were teenagers, they were working, like working real jobs, learning real things, right? There was none of this nonsense of going to school till you're 18 and then going to college till you're 22 and then getting a real job. I mean, that's nobody's ever done that in history. That's crazy. But anyway, he said that during that period of adolescence, from say puberty, we'll just say 12 to 18 or so, to when you start to mature more, during that period, you are way more susceptible to be corrupted by friends. You don't have the wisdom yet, right? You're still very foolish in a lot of ways. But when you take kids like that and you put them with adults and they were working and they were among other adults, they were learning to be mature. They were learning what the real world is as they grew up. Now, look at what we do. We put kids together, not with adults, with other morons, their same age. They're surrounded by idiots all day long that are idiots just like they are. You're laughing. You probably know it's true, right? They're surrounded by idiots just like themselves. And what do they learn? What the other idiots do, right? And then their idiocy just compounds, and hey, I'll teach you a little bit of my idiocy, and then you can show me some of your idiocy, and we'll become greater idiots. And you wonder why they graduate from high school, and they're completely worthless. They weren't taught anything, and they were among idiots their whole lives. What do you expect a kid that doesn't have his rational faculties fully developed yet, and surround him by idiots for 6 or 8 years? What do you expect him to be but an idiot? Think about it. I hadn't really thought about that. I would say probably the worst thing that we can do to young people is to send them to school to be around kids their own age for their whole period of adolescence. It's crazy. And if you don't believe me, look around. For goodness sakes, the evidence, it's there. It's everywhere. Do we have mature kids graduating high school that are adults ready to go out there into the world, the average kid? No way. They are completely clueless. They don't have any idea what it's like to be in the real world. They don't know where money comes from. They don't know how to work hard. They don't have a work ethic. And it's not just 18-year-old kids. It's kids in their 20s. It's kids in their 30s. And I call them kids because they are. I'm not going to call an idiot like that an adult. They're kids. I could call James an adult probably. But I'll tell you what, kids that are 20-some years old that are out there in the world today, I'll call them kids because they're kids. Some of them, anyway. Did I read Proverbs? I did read Proverbs 28:7. That was kind of a rant, but that was a real eye-opener for me. Now, having children is no reason to have constant chaos and pandemonium at home or in public. I think a lot of people just assume this. And I've heard people say it. I mean, if you have kids, it's just chaos. It's just chaos. At home, it's just chaos. Everywhere you go, it's chaos, right? Classrooms are chaos. It's just chaos and pandemonium. And they just assume that that's just the way it is. You have kids, you have chaos. Does it have to be that way? When you read through the Bible, does the Bible give a description of childhood and adolescence as chaos? Do you read about Abraham's family? Was it chaos? David wasn't a very good father. Was it chaos? Yeah, kind of. Absalom, right? And Adonijah? Yeah, it was chaos. He was a bad father, right? But generally speaking, when you read about what the Bible prescribes, does it prescribe 18 years of chaos in the house? No. It doesn't have to be chaos. People just assume that's so. I like Tom Woods. I listen to his podcast. He's got 5 kids. And I wish the guy was converted to Sovereign Grace. I really like the guy. He's a hardcore pre-Vatican II Catholic. And I certainly can't agree with him there. I agree with him on a lot of stuff. But I think he's a good father, as far as I can tell, other than teaching his kids all this Catholic crap. But, other than that, he seems to be a good father. And he said he'll have people come up to him, and he'll tell them he has 5 kids, and they'll be like, oh, boy, I feel bad for you. That's crazy. He says, that offends me. That's ridiculous. He's like, my kids are a huge blessing to me. It's not chaos. It's a lot of work, yeah. But it's not like Nowadays, though, somebody comes up to you and you have a big family and you tell them how many kids you have and they say, oh, that's crazy. Why? Why is it crazy? It doesn't have to be crazy. It's only going to be so if you let it be. If parents properly discipline their children, they will be a joy for both parents and visitors to be around. It can happen. I have had the pleasure to be in homes where children were properly disciplined, and as a result, they were quiet, polite, and not distracting or aggravating. And that seems crazy to hear, but I have experienced it. I was down, and I'll just give you the example. I was down in Florida. I was visiting a couple of friends from the Lakeland Church, used to be in Cincinnati, and they have three kids, and the older ones are a little bit older. They're maybe 10 and 12 or something, but they have a three-year-old, too. And three kids, and you just wouldn't have even known the kids were there. They were there. They were right there. I mean, but they were quiet, polite. They didn't, I mean, they would talk and, you know, but, and they'd go off and they didn't even have TV. They weren't playing, they didn't sit and play video games or anything. They'd just go off, they'd read or they'd play. They were, and we were there from 4:30 in the afternoon until 1:30 in the morning. We were there forever and just talking. And those kids were never, I don't even hardly notice them. They were not a distraction. It was just amazing. And I just said, wow, this is something. Well, I went home and I told my mother about it. Because my brother would say, you know, oh, that's impossible. That couldn't happen. No way. You know, because his house is quite different. It's pandemonium. It's chaos. It's crazy. But anyway, he would say that can't happen. And I always have child discipline and child development talks with my mom. And she's largely on the same page, but I think she still thinks, oh yeah, you'll find out what it's really like when you get there or whatever. I still don't think that she doesn't really think that I know what I'm talking about. So I went home and I just wanted to tell her. I said, you know, we were at Chad and Canoles, and it was amazing. I mean, it was just like the kids were quiet. They just, you didn't even notice they were there. And she's just like, huh. Like she couldn't, I mean, she had to believe it because I wasn't lying, but she just couldn't hardly, she was just so shocked, I think, by that. And she's like, oh, they must just be not, you know. And I was telling her, I've experienced this in other houses too. And she says, oh, well, the kids just must not be active. I said, no, they're active. I mean, I know these kids, you let them go out and play or you let them do whatever they want. They are active. It's just that they were disciplined. So anyway, it is possible for the home not to be chaos and crazy. And I know today in most homes, it's crazy. I mean, you just walk in there and it's just kids running, screaming, whatever, and parents are exasperated and chasing them all around and can't control them. But that's not, it doesn't have to be that way. It therefore can be done because I've seen it done. It's just a matter of ensuring that your will, not your children's will, is done. You see, you don't need to be stressed and flustered and exhausted because of unruly children. Now, you may be stressed and exhausted just because of children, because they're a lot of work, right? And the littler they are, the more the work they are. And they always got to change their diapers, and you got to feed them, and they're crying. You don't know why they're crying or whatever. And you got all this stuff, and you got to clean up their messes, and they're pooping and puking all over the place and making messes or whatever. I mean, I'm sure it's exhausting, right? But one thing you don't have to be exhausted and aspirated about is unruly children. You don't have to have a chaotic, crazy, stressful, flustered, exhausted, stressed life because of unruly children. Only if you let it be that way. And I intended to get through a lot more today, but I'm not going to. I'm sure it's been well over an hour. Yeah, hour and 18. So I will stop for there and we'll pick it up next Sunday, Lord willing. And we're going to talk about what types of behavior merit discipline. And then we're going to talk about how discipline is to be done.